Hello? It's absolutely great to see how much you love each other. Obviously, some of you guys haven't seen each other for a long time. When I was at university training to become a teacher, they told us, in order not to wear you out in front of the class, you just need to stand there and wait silently. Because everybody pays so much respect to the teacher, obviously, that's our experience in high school, that people just automatically become quiet, waiting for you to say whatever enlightenment you want to share. It's not quite working in this church, but I think that's good. I want to just quickly introduce myself for those of you who don't know me, who are just here on a visit, on a holiday. Can I see who that is? All right. Welcome here. I'm not quite on a holiday, but I'm on a visit here myself. My name is Gernot. I come from Germany. My wife's in the crash with our little one. My two daughters, I don't know where they are, but they're somewhere around here. We come from Germany, and we're here as part of a bigger group, which actually is not so big this morning because four are in the hospital and the other ones are sleeping, recovering from our nights at the German party zone. So we're those type of Christians, the night we drink beer, party, go out, and then we're here in church, pretend we're living a good life. Can everybody please stand up who came over from Germany with us, from Switzerland? So this is the crew. Thank you. You can sit down again. The truth is we're actually really 50 in total. Yeah, everybody involved. But some of them have been out in Magaluf tonight. I'll share quickly about what we do there. And they're sleeping. Others are sick. And then really we have four in the hospital with salmonella. It's the same word in English. Huh? Yeah. So that's a very good way to make people see how desperately they need Jesus at the Balaman, because all the people who have that infection right now, they ate a certain type of döner at a döner place right at the mega park, the discotheque. And so when they come with their döner eating it, we say, hey, look, you know, I really want you to enjoy your food, but you know, some of our guys ate that döner yesterday there and they're in the hospital now. And he's like, really? Yeah, but you know, like, come and be with us at the service at the beach. Jesus can heal you. They're much more open, you know. So what do we do? God has given us a vision a couple of years ago that God really wants to transform the party zone of Mallorca. For the British people, it's Magaluf. For the Dutch and Germans, it's the Balaman. It's a strip of 500-600 meters with lots of bars and restaurants and really, really bad nightclubs. And we just thought, well, we're going to the third world, we're going to all type of nations around the world, sharing Jesus with people. Why not to German tourists at the place where they have time to get to know other people? Alcohol sometimes helps if they speak about their inner feelings. And we just reached them there where they've never expected. And so we did this the seventh time now. Actually, it's only possible through the help of this church that so many times housed us here in this place, helped us with permissions, people going to the administration and Calvia so we could do what we did yesterday. I'll say something about that in a second. I want to say that before I keep going. Thank you so much, Raf. Thank you so much, Loretta. Thank you to all of the church for your amazing support for us. We really, really love you. So what we do at the Balaman is actually very simple. We put a sign on the beach and it says beach service, 9:30 and 11 o'clock. That's about it. We usually don't have any equipment. We just start to yell like in the good old times, you know, 19th century, where somebody would get up on a box and just preach to people. We sing two songs, unamplified. None of us has the voice of Alex, and people still come, you know. And then after a while, you have about 100 people standing there, and they're just eager to listen to what we have to share about God. And we have every night people turning around, giving their lives to Jesus, crying. And yesterday, it was so amazing. It was so amazing. First time ever we had the permission to do this amplified. So we put some music on, and really, of two of the three services that we did, I don't think that I'm exaggerating with the numbers. We had more than 200 people standing there. and they're sitting there for 25 minutes hearing the message. And then the last service last night, you know, like we asked them to give the Lord their lives to the Lord, and there were dozens of people raising their hands, praying right there at the beach. There was one woman, she was immediately baptized. Johannes, you want to come and share real quick how that was? Because he can tell it better than me. She was there listening, and then she wanted to be baptized.
Good morning.
It's the alcohol. This is what.
The microphone.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Thank you. There was one lady yesterday evening at the beach. She came to us and she said, "I've been interested in Jesus for a long time, and I've been looking for Jesus a long time. I have tried a lot of different things, spiritual things, but I'm looking for Jesus. I want forgiveness of sin. I want to know God." So she came to us and she said, "Can you baptize me right now?" And we asked her, "Do you really want that? I mean, your life will be over and a new life will start. Are you sure about it?" And she said, "Yes, I know what it's all about and I want it now." So who are we to say no?
Yeah.
So we took off out our cell phones from our bags and went into the Mediterranean Sea and we baptized her there. And the very interesting thing was, she did not know about it, but the travel guide brought her there because he had heard about it, that we are there, and he knew about her wanting to get baptized. So he said, "There are people who can do it."
Yeah, yeah. So for us, this is really a dream coming true, that God's doing something new with those people there, and we could really share so many stories. If you want to experience that yourself, you're more than invited to join us. Just hang out with us at the Balaman starting from 9 o'clock in the evening. All days until Thursday, except for tomorrow, because this is our free day and we desperately need it. You can just come there in front of the mega park. You will find us wearing yellow t-shirts saying we believe in wonders and an image of a woman on appropriate. And just be with us there and just pray, watch, talk to people. It's actually fun. Yeah, it's really fun. All right. I want to share a story with you. I have a group of nine young men in Germany that are very, very close to my heart. They're all young leaders. Most of them are married. They serve in their churches. They serve as worship leaders. Some of them have regular jobs, some of them are full-time in ministry. And God just put it on my heart to start a mentoring group for them, and so we meet once a year. We go somewhere for a week, and we just talk about life. We talk about our relationships with our wives, almost all of them have wives. We talk about how we're doing in our personal relationship with the Lord, the things we're struggling with, how we're doing with our ministry assignment that God has given us. It's a really special time. So this year, we went to Morocco. And Morocco is a wonderful place. It has the highest mountain of North Africa sitting right there, an hour away from the city where we were, Marrakesh. One of the guys in my group, with his family, he's a missionary in Marrakesh and serves there with Frontiers. So we did our trip there, had a very good time. And then one morning, we said, let's do a trip to the mountains. And we got a Muslim tour guide, and he was guiding us, you know, and we were on the way. And I'm the type of guy, I like experiential learning. Things stick with me a lot more if I can feel them, taste them, see them, and not just hear them. I don't know if you're similar to me when it comes to that. And because I'm paying for those trips, not with my personal money, but money that I'm receiving from the States, I'm the kind of the guru of the group, and I can do whatever I want, you know. So I said, okay, I want you to do something very weird. We were walking through a very rocky area, and I said, I want you all to pick up two stones about that size. And then please take off your shoe, right, left shoe, you can choose it for yourself. Put the two stones inside under your feet. Put the shoes back on. Just do it. And they were looking at me as if I had lost my senses, you know, like maybe too much sun or whatever. But, you know, as I said, because I'm paying, they did it. And then I said, do you feel the stones under your feet? And they said, yeah, we can feel them. And I said, okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to climb up that rock. Yeah, there was like a little rock further up on the mountain, maybe like a 10-minute hike. I said, I want you to climb up to that rock. I want you to do it alone. I want you to do it silently. And I want you to feel the pain of those stones in your shoes. They probably thought by then that I turned into a Catholic, you know, like who watched too much of Da Vinci Code. But I gave them an explanation. I said, while you're walking up and while you feel the pain of those stones under your feet, I want you to think of an area in your life that's affecting you in a similar way than stones. Those stones in your shoes, they don't make it impossible for you to walk. You can still walk. You can still go on with the path of life. But they're a constant burden. They're a constant reminder, something's not really working well in my life. Think of a sin that you're tolerating in your life. Think of an inferiority where you know that God's calling you to take certain steps, but you're not doing it because you feel so inferior. And not that I'm arguing for a wrong sense of self-confidence, but you're not making that step that you say, Lord, give me the courage, and I receive the courage, I walk in the courage of what you're calling me to do. Think of a fear that's paralyzing you. Yesterday, I was at the Balaman, and I was very openly sharing with people about areas of fear in my life. I lost a lot of relatives in my family to cancer, and so I'm the kind of guy who has a tendency for hypochondria, yeah. So it's like I have like my stomach hurts, and I think I'm gonna die of a stomach tumor, yeah? Or you know, it's that kind of thing. And it's weird, it doesn't make sense, but it's there, you know? So we all have those type of fears, and sometimes they paralyze us. So I said, why are you walking up that hill? Think of an area, a sin, a fear, an inferiority, something in your life that is a constant reminder something is not wrong. And particularly when you want to take up speed in life, it becomes painful. If you walk carefully, you know, like you kind of can avoid the stone, but try to run, it's impossible. So we went up the hill. Reached the top, and there was a woman coming up with another tour guide. And she said, hello. And we said, hello. She was speaking in English to us because she didn't assume that we were German. And then she really kind of wanted to be nice. She said, how are you guys? And I said, oh, we're great. Which was an outright lie. I said, we're great. And then I turned to the guy walking next to me, and I said this in German. I said, well, it's not true, but aren't we used to lying in real life also, you know? We do it in real life and don't say the truth, so why not now, you know? But she was German. she was Swiss German. And she picked up what I said, you know, and she said, so why are you saying this, you know? Like with a good Swiss accent, you know, why are you saying this? What's wrong with your lives? Now I want to know. And I said, well, you know, like, we're walking in the mountains and we all have stones in our shoes, you know? And she said, really? Why are you doing this? Well, you know, it's... And I said, you know, like, sometimes we have fears and inferiorities and sins in our lives and they kind of make it hard for us to walk, but you don't need to really understand this. But you know this too, don't you? She said, yeah, it's true. So we're thinking about how Jesus can help us with this. And she said, oh, it's interesting. I said, yeah, it's interesting. So I'm almost done with my story. So we came down to the place where we started off. And then I did something which my guys thought was even weirder. I said, I want you to go together in groups of two or three. And now I want you to do something. I want you to ask the other two people in your group to take your shoe off. You know, like there are cultures where this is so inappropriate, but even leave that aside. I mean, feet are so smelly if you walk temperature 40 degrees through the Moroccan mountains, you know. It's embarrassing, you know. I don't want anyone to take my shoe off and smell what's coming out of that shoe, you know. I remember I was in Norway one time with a friend. I was 17 years old, and we were staying with family for 1 week, and I bought those sport shoes, and I wore them without socks. And after 1 week, I was unable, even with a brush, to get the sweat off my feet. And that family said, you can always come back, but please get rid of your feet before you ever come in again, yeah? So that's a smelly thing. So I said, hey, I want you to ask somebody to take your shoe off and take the stones out. And I said, I'm perfectly aware that I'm asking you to do something very embarrassing, but you know what? With the real stones in our lives, sometimes we try it for so long to get rid of them ourselves, and we know we need to go to somebody else and say, I need help. Please help me with this. I'm not managing to do it myself. And it's the same type of embarrassment you feel. I don't enjoy going to people and share about my sin. I do it regularly because I think I need it, but I don't enjoy it. It has an embarrassing element to it. So we did it. We took off our shoes and we asked each other, so what do these stones stand for in your life? And because we have trust with each other, because we love each other, you know, like everybody had the freedom to share that. And you would hold that stone in your hand and would say, this stone in my life stands for this. And then we would speak forgiveness into each other's lives. We would pray for each other, and then we would take that stone and throw it down the hill. Really to sense with all our senses, Jesus has taken it away. He's broken that chain. He's taken that fear. He's forgiven that sin. So, what does the stone stand for in your life? Can you think of something? Would you be able to name something in your life that's not making it impossible for you to walk your life with Jesus, but it's making it a lot more troublesome, and it's keeping you from taking up speed for the kingdom? Is there something? Can you think of something? You don't need to tell me. You just need to know. Let's turn to our Bibles. Open them in Mark chapter 5. I want to talk to you about a woman today who definitely had a stone in her shoe, but she also experienced the power of Jesus in a very real way. And the story I'm going to read is part of a larger story. Jesus was called by Jairus, I think that's how you say it in English. He was the leader of a local synagogue. And his daughter died or was in the process of dying, and Jesus was called to come. And Jesus stops in the scene to have that encounter with that woman that I'm going to read about now. Jesus went with him, and the crowd thronged behind. And there was a woman in the crowd who had a hemorrhage for 12 years. Hemorrhage sind Blutungen auf Deutsch. She's bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors through the years and had spent everything she had to pay them, but she had gotten no better. In fact, she was worse. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched the fringe of his robe. For she thought to herself, if I can just touch his clothing, I will be healed. Immediately the bleeding stopped and she could feel that she had been healed. Jesus realized at once that healing power had gone out from him, so he turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? His disciples said to him, all this crowd is pressing around you. How can you ask who touched me? But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and told him what she had done. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. You have been healed. You know, the Bible tells us very little about that woman. We don't know her name. We don't know where she was from. She's just called a woman. And the kind of information we get about her is that she had for 12 years a serious physical issue. She was constantly bleeding, and not the type of bleeding that women have to go through every month, but it was something more severe. It was something grave. It was affecting her daily life. This woman must have been in a lot of pain. I don't think she was able to live her life freely. I assume that there are people here today and you have a physical condition for many years. I was touched when Raf was speaking this morning about, what's the name of, about Hannah. And you know, the pain she must be going through without being able to express it as small as she is, but then also the pain for those who love her, you know, her family, who worry for her. You know, those of you who go through a lot of physical pain, you know how that feels like, and the despair that's in your life where you think, is this ever going to end? When I was younger, I was doing a lot of sports, and I remember in school, somebody jumped on my leg, and I went to the doctor, and he said, Garrett, for 4 weeks, you can't do sports. I cried. For some girls in school, this would be the reason for eternal celebration, you know, like, but I cried. I seriously cried. I said, I want to move my body. Not being able to move this leg for 4 weeks as I like to, it was terrible for me. And now here's a woman, 12 years in pain, a chronic sickness. And she tried everything, but nothing helped. But I think here's a larger issue at stake, and that is the type of sickness this woman had, blood coming through her body, that really made her completely unacceptable for society. She was considered unclean in that culture. She was considered maybe even punished by God, rejected by God in a sense, because she was not clean to approach him. People did not want to relate to her, because if you would touch somebody that is bleeding in that way, that means you become unclean yourself. So I think that woman probably lived a very lonely life. I don't think many people wanted to relate to her. And those people who suffer of chronic sicknesses in their lives, they know far worse than the pain is if you're suddenly not invited anymore to parties, because the only thing you can talk about is your issue. Yeah, if people keep you from certain things they do, if you realize their attention span with you is very, very small because they don't want to get too close to your suffering. Have you ever made those experiences? We make them at work, we make them in our families, we make them at school, and that's terrible. And then on top of all that, you know, like every day you come to God and you say, God, heal me. And it's not just that he's, so far he had kept the healing from that woman. I don't know if she prayed or not, but she must have felt that also God rejected her. Why would otherwise he punish her with a sickness that would make her unacceptable to God? I think the stone in the life of that woman was huge. And it's very easy to understand why she would do everything to try to get rid of that sickness. It says here she had suffered a great deal from many doctors. The doctors tried things on her. It didn't work. And she spent everything she had to pay them. Now she had tried everything. I wanna interpret this looking for help at the doctors and spending everything she had in a metaphoric way. What I'm not trying to say is that doctors are bad, but I want to say this woman did everything that was humanly possible. Humanly possible, in a natural possible, to change her situation. And now let me come back to the Balaman, you know. When I talk to people at the Balaman, I sometimes say, hey, guys, let's leave God out of the picture, okay? I know you know I'm a Christian, so probably you think I'm not doing those things, and I don't. But let's leave God out of the picture for a moment. And I say to them, can you please explain to me how this concept of party, going into this place that you can only mentally bear if you're drunk yourself, how can this concept of party really fulfill you? You're taking a plane, coming down here, you get totally drunk. After day two, your head aches, you throw up, you do embarrassing things that people take on camera and put it on Facebook. How can this concept of party excite you? I just don't get it. And you know what people so many times say? It's so interesting to hear that. They say, well, you're right. But you know, my life at home is so stressful. My work, there's so much pressure. My relationships are so going bad. So this is my way of escaping into a different reality. I know I will wake up to my old reality 3 days later, but I try to escape it somehow. I try to do what is in my power to change the reality I live in, or to forget it for some time. This woman that was baptized yesterday, you know, like, it was a woman searching for truth. She tried Reiki. She tried several spiritual movements. She tried what was possible in her own power, according to her knowledge, to improve her life, to make her life more worth living. You see, and we all look for something. We all look for a concept of salvation in our lives that we jump to. If we don't seek healing and fulfillment and peace with Jesus, for some it's working our butts off. Yeah, for some it's sports, for some it's relationships, for some it's doing stupid things because you feel like other people will like you. There's this hole in you and you're trying everything humanly possible to fill it. And that's what this woman did. She tried what was in her ability to get rid of that stone in her life. There is a church father that I really love. His name is Augustine. And he used to be a philosopher of his time himself before he became a Christian. So he knew all the different movements, all the different opinions about how to be happy in life. And when he finally reached salvation, when he found Jesus, he said a statement I think is remarkable. He said, "All the philosophers of my time, they're like people standing on a hill surrounded by a forest. And from that hill, far away, they see the land of peace. They know it's there. They want to go there, but they don't know how to get there." So all the philosophies, all, to live life, they all have that same passion and desire to them. We want to live life good. We want to live life in peace. And they try down different avenues, but they never get there. And you know what Augustine said at the end of his life? He said, "Our souls are restless until they rest in him." That was his life story. Our souls are restless and they look for ways to numb the pain, to numb the fear, to numb the inferiority. But our souls, they stay restless until they rest in Jesus. And I think this is something that this woman slowly came to realize. She had heard about Jesus. It doesn't say she knew Jesus very well. Probably she knew a lot less about Jesus than you do. You who go to a church every week, who have an excellent teacher here in this church, you know so much about Jesus. She probably didn't know much. She had heard about Jesus. Maybe a friend told her. Maybe she once saw him standing somewhere at the corner teaching and she found it kind of interesting. But there was still this fear, he isn't a holy man. Should I really approach him? I think that was a big part in her heart. You know what people at the Balaman say? They say, I don't know if I can come to God. You know, like, I'm drunk. What I did yesterday, I don't want to mention. You know, I'm taking drugs. You know, they have a sense for the holiness of God and they feel like they cannot approach him. And they're right. They're right. That was so cool yesterday. You know, like when we started preaching at the Balaman, you know, like kind of happy if they stay at all. And you realize, oh, this kind of works, but let's be careful with the full message, you know, like the small print, let's keep it for later, you know? And after a couple of days, we say, hey, you guys are sinners and you need to repent, you know? And if you do, you will find salvation. You know how boldness grows even there. So she probably felt very unworthy to approach Jesus, and that's why she had a plan. Her biggest fear was to be discovered. She wanted to stay anonymous. Look, when I asked you what is the stone in your life, just imagine I would have taken the microphone and say, so now, let's do a time of sharing, each one of you. She didn't want people to know what was going on in her life. So what was her plan? She thought to herself, if I can just get close enough to him and touch his robe, if he really is who he is, that will be enough. Power will flow in my life. I don't even know if she had faith. Maybe she just had a hope. And the way we understand hope as Christians is more than just wishful thinking. I think you all know that. But maybe she had hope. So she goes up to Jesus. Through the crowd. Jesus is in a hurry. And if Jesus was at ease, probably Jairus made sure he would go walk fast. And this woman, she probably felt like we feel many times, does Jesus see me? Is he not too busy with other things, other people? Does he see me with my little problem? So she finds her way through the crowd and she touches Jesus, touches his robe. And suddenly, I don't know how she must have felt. Probably it was like electricity running through her body. She felt how the power of God flew into her life, how it touched her, and she immediately came to the realization, this hemorrhage is gone. She just knew it. And then her worst nightmare came true. Jesus stops. Her plan was, I go, I touch him, I go away. I come to the church service, I pray my prayer, I leave it with God, I go home. Nobody needs to know about this. Her biggest nightmare comes true. Jesus stops and he says, who touched me? Who was this person who reached out for me? You know, and the disciples, I love them. You know, like if the disciples were not there, I would feel so bad about so many thoughts I have. But you know, they always nail it. You know, like, and it makes sense what they said. You know, like, so they say, hey, Jesus, what do you mean? What are you saying? There's a huge crowd following you. The people are pressing onto you. Everybody's touching you. And there's such a big secret in that simple verse, you know. You can be in this church every week. You can be in Christian meetings until you die. You can be under the word every week. And in a sense, there is a blessing of God that you receive by just being under the word. In some sense, that's true. But you can go in and out of this place. You can be under the teaching of Jesus and it affects your life zero. Jesus is looking for people who respond in faith to him. And say, I reach out actively. I touch you. I take it from you. I incorporate it into my life. I make it my personal truth. I make it my personal experience. There is a sense of blessing of just hearing and being there. I don't want to deny that. It's better than staying home in bed. Guys, yeah, it's better. But there's so much more. And you activate it. You activate what Jesus has in his hands for you by reaching out in faith. This is what this woman does. Who has touched me? Who wants to touch him this morning? It's an important question to answer for all of us. Jesus realized at once that healing power had gone out from him. He turned around the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? His disciples said to him, all this crowd is pressing around you. How can you ask who touched me? But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Who was it? Did you reach out in faith this morning already? Did you do it? I don't know. He's looking for it. He's looking around in the room. Who reached out? Then the frightened woman. It was about the same expression you had on your face for something. All right. Then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to him, came and fell at his feet. Falling at Jesus' feet, you know, prostrating to his feet, that's a sign of worship. I think prostrating ourselves to Jesus' feet, there is no magical power in it by himself. But if you're prostrating before Jesus is an expression of your inner condition, I think you put yourself into a position to receive from Jesus. My grandma, my goodness, she went on her knees and she prayed and you would hear it through two doors, you know. But I'm not talking about a religious act. I'm talking about an expression of the inner condition of your heart. She fell at his feet and told him what she had done. Jesus, it was me. I did it. He said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. You have been healed. Why did Jesus do it? Look, I think the only thing that this woman was interested in was healing. Healing of a physical condition. And if we're honest, sometimes we abuse God in the same way. And you know what? He even allows us to do that. Do You know that Jesus many times healed people, touched people's lives without them being thankful or expressing faith, even without expressing faith. He just did it because he's good. So we are the same. Many times we just seek God to have that miraculous change in our lives that we're hoping for so much. And as soon as we have it, our interest in God ceases again to the level that we had before. Is that true? Yeah. But Jesus wanted to use that moment to assure that woman that a higher dimension is involved, and that is the peace of her heart. Peace is this Hebrew word, shalom, in the Bible. And you know, like, if we speak about peace in our culture, if we're not a part of a Christian culture, peace means the absence of conflict or war. That's what, how we define peace. But you know, in the biblical understanding of the word peace, there's so many more layers involved. Shalom, peace, means well-being of all of your being. It involves your spiritual health, your physical health, your emotional life. It even involves your family, and it involves the house you live in and your financial condition. Peace means everything is at ease. It doesn't mean we don't have challenges, but God's peace affects us holistically. And Jesus didn't want that woman to go away just with a healed body. He wanted to speak into her life that that faith that she expressed towards him by touching him, that it brought holistic peace and restoration back into her life. He wanted to assure her, you are now a daughter. You are now a daughter. Look, in some sense, we are all created children of God. Yeah, in some sense, we're all made by God. He's our originator. He's the father. But then the Bible uses the term children of God, daughters and sons, in a specific way. He calls people daughters and sons that have accepted the Lord by faith and have become part of God's family. That's how the Bible uses the term. And when Jesus here says daughter, he doesn't use it lightly, that word. He says you've become part of the kingdom, your family. You're now part of this universal family that crosses all cultures and borders. You are part of the children of God now. He wanted to assure that you're a child and peace has come into your life, not just healing. He wanted all the masses around, the people around, to know that this person got healed physically and that she activated her faith in a way that made her part of God's family. That's what Jesus wanted to share. And that's why he would even do something that would embarrass that woman. You know what I did yesterday when I did my altar call? I thought, God, I've done my message now. This is the moment that counts. 200 people standing there listening. They didn't go away. And I said, now I'm going to call them to you. I'm going to ask them to ask you for forgiveness of sin and to invite you into their lives. I came to that moment. And I knew I'm going to ask them to put up their hands. And I was watching them. There were groups of people. You know, like when they come as friends, one or two are really interested, and others, they just want to go on to the club. And I said, I'm going to ask you to put up your hand now. And I know what you're thinking. Your friends are around. And you think, if I really do this now, even though I have it in my heart, this is going to be so embarrassing. And I said, you know what? The Jesus we're calling to right now, he died naked on a cross, and he did it for you. It was the most embarrassing and shameful moment in his life. So what's really the true sacrifice involved for you if you put up your hand and say, I need Jesus? You know? What's the embarrassment of going to somebody, to God or to somebody else, and to say, there is an issue in my life? What level of embarrassment is that compared to what Jesus has done for us, dying naked at the cross? Tell me. Tell me. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said an interesting thing. He said, we people, we are not holy. We're sanctified in Christ. But, you know, like the way we use the term holy, we don't live always holy lives. We're not holy, but God is holy. But isn't it interesting that we have such an easy time confessing our sins to God, who is holy, and that we have so much trouble confessing our sins to other people who are just sinning as we do sometimes? Isn't that a paradox? Jesus, in a sense, embarrassed that woman, but he did it with salvation in mind for that woman and for all the people around to see. Guys, are we going to do it like that woman this morning? Are we going to receive salvation for those of us who haven't done that yet? Are we going to receive restoration and peace? Or are we going to leave this place with stones in our shoes? Are we going to walk through Santa Ponsa the rest of the day with stones in our shoes? Came in here the same way we're leaving. This is not what church is for. This is a community of broken people and who know that they're broken. That's the great news. There's no place that should be easier to be honest about our lives than the church. I mean, where else? Hey, those guys in the mega park, they don't have any problem talking about their sins, you know? They're proud of them. What's wrong with us? What's wrong with us? I wanted to ask you to do three things this morning. So now the message starts. No. Name the stone. Call it by name. What is the issue in your life? Don't allow yourself to keep this as an abstract concept in your head. Oh, it could be this or it could be that, but I didn't nail it in my mind and say, this is it. Can you be honest with yourself today? Can you say, this is my stone? That's number one. And then number two, I'm going to ask Alex to sing a song with us in just a minute. Can we do something all together? Can we take the stone and we can bring it to Jesus and say, Lord, here I am this morning. I'm stretching out in faith. Sometimes it even helps us if we do it physically. And we say, Lord, here's my hand. I'm stretching out to you. Lord, I bring it to you. I need freedom. I need your power. I need forgiveness. I need deliverance. Take my stone and then hold it up and then just experience how it falls in the presence of Jesus. That's the second thing I want you to do today. Activate your faith. Don't just be part of the crowd that's pushing on Jesus, but that's not really touching him. And then point number three, maybe it's time for you to say, enough is enough. And I'm going to go to somebody today here in this room. And it doesn't have to be the pastor. Just somebody to trust. And I say, I don't want to leave this room again without having talked to anybody. This is my issue. I want it to be out in the open. Can you please pray for me? And please, if you do that, tell the real deal. Tell the real deal, not just the symptom. I'm done. It's up to you. Alex, can you lead us in a song? That'd be great.